Good morning and welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. My name is Ann Gardner, and to my right is Justice Bob McCoy, and to my left is Justice Bill Meyer. We're your panel for this morning. We have, one case taken off the docket, so we have five, but only one oral argument scheduled. J.P. Morgan Chase Bank versus Professional Pharmacy 2. And I'll ask the clerk to call the case, please.
The court will now call J.P. Morgan Chase Bank versus Professional Pharmacy. May it please the court, Mr. Stephen Pulaski will argue for the appellant. Mr. John Haven will argue for the appellate.
All right, Mr. Pulaski, are you ready to proceed?
May it please the court, as announced, I am Steve Pulaski. I do represent the appellant, as I'm sure the court's aware through the briefing with the facts and the procedural history, but I would like to touch on just a few pertinent facts briefly. Number one, as attached in our brief as Appendix C, which I don't normally attach evidence, but it's the operative document in the case. It's the January 14, 2003 Master Account Agreement. This is the only bank account in the case. This is the only account in evidence. It's the only account in existence. It's the account out of which the funds were paid pursuant to a garnishment order. What is significant about this account agreement is that the owners of the account are Fidelis Bassong and Pamela Ashew, as stated on the agreement. They sign as owners. The appellant, Professional Pharmacy 2, is not an owner or party to the account agreement. This account, again, was opened January 14, 2003. 5 years later, in February of 2008, the trial court signed a garnishment judgment against Washington Mutual Bank, the account, the bank, and ordered us to pay the funds out of the account, which was done, approximately $116,183. Plus $500 in attorney's fees. 5.5 years after the opening of the account, plaintiff or appellee Professional Pharmacy 2 filed the lawsuit. They alleged specifically in their petition that Professional Pharmacy 2, as a oral Texas General Partnership, opened a business account at Washington Mutual. They call it the 3775 account. It's the last four digits of the account. They alleged a breach of that depository contract, and they alleged negligence for the bank's transfer of the funds out of that account pursuant to the garnishment order or judgment. Case went to trial. Two pertinent jury questions. The first one in this Appendix B to our brief, page 729 in the record, question number one was the question that was asked of regarding the formation or the existence of the contract that the appellee pled. And the question is, did plaintiff and Washington Mutual agree to a partnership account for the account ending in number 3775 on January 14, 2003? A basic contract formation question. The jury answered no. The appellee lost the case at that point. The appellee failed to prove the existence of its depository contract, failed to prove a contractual relationship with the bank. Significantly, that jury question number one is not challenged on appeal. There was no cross appeal. There is no challenge of that finding on appeal. The other question, question nine, is the negligence question. The jury answered as to, do you find negligence of any of the parties? They answered yes as to the bank, put it at 85%, and then found injury or damages in the amount of $180,683. The judgment was entered based on this negligence finding against the bank, and that's the judgment that's challenged on appeal.
Now, isn't there contention that now, at least on appeal, was it at the trial court, that the reason they're was no contract, as found by the jury, was because of the negligence of the bank.
That's an allegation made on appeal, not in the pleadings, but it is raised on appeal that the negligence is in the appellee not entering a contractual relationship. And I think in that particular instance, Your Honor, a couple issues are certainly pertinent to that, and I can jump to those. One of those in particular would be issue number 10, which is limitations. And in that issue, again, a cause of action accrues, it's a question of law, when a cause of action accrues. The cause of action under that theory accrues on January 14, 2003. That's the date that the appellee failed or did not enter into a contractual relationship with the bank that it says that it desired to do. It's a question of law. The accrual is when a wrongful act causes a legal injury. And what the appellee focuses on appeal is not the legal injury requirement, but focuses on when it realized it had certain resulting economic damages, when the account was frozen or garnished 5 years later. That's not the inquiry. The case law is clear. It's when the legal injury occurs. In other words, obviously, as the court's aware, you have a car accident on day one, it's 2 years for negligence. You don't wait 5 years and say, well, I didn't really think my back hurt until 5 years later. The legal injury here is the appellee did not have an account that it says it desired to enter into. It did not enter a contractual relationship. Any money in the account is subject to the account contract, subject to terms and conditions of that account. That account's subject to garnishment for judgments against the owners. There's a legal injury on January 14, 2003, aside from the basic legal injury that they didn't enter a contract they wanted. So limitations, cause of action accrues, limitations would bar that claim.
Let me ask this.
Yes, Justice.
Had they sued the day after they entered into this contract, what would they, for negligence, what would they have recovered?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, with respect to the question of, and I'm not parsing words with Your Honor, but when you say they entered into the contract, that's the point. They, Fidelis Bisong and his wife, Pamela Ashew,
I understand.
Entered it.
Saying, had they brought a claim for negligence, what would they have recovered?
Your Honor, at that point in time, I don't think that they would recover anything. I don't think that because there's no legal duty at that point. The case law also, as we address, and I believe it's issue.
Hence, limitations would come and go, and they couldn't file suit.
Well, because no legal duties owed to them, and also because, as a matter of law, if they're not owed a legal duty, there wouldn't be any cause of action as a primary threshold issue in the negligence claim. But assuming that they could find some legal duty, then presumably they could try to bring that claim within a limitations period. But the damages, it comes to another point, which is they'd fail on the damages. I mean, the first issue of the no legal duty, I think, is important, is that the law in Texas, and that's issue number 3 in our brief, is before you can bring that negligence claim, you have to have a legal duty as a matter of law. There is no legal duty owed to a third party to the account with respect to monies or funds paid out of that account. Remember, these were general deposits, a general deposit account. This is the standard Bank One line of cases that a bank relies on its deposit agreement, the written contract, in determining to whom it's indebted, the account owners. There's no legal duty in opening the account. That's the Owens versus Comerica Bank cases, Guerra versus Regions Bank line of cases discussed in our brief. And again, that negligence wasn't pled, but that's the Texas law on this point, that if you go into a bank to open an account and you don't, you know that as a matter of law at that point, you didn't enter a contract. At that point in time, a duty's not owed to you as a non-customer. And the cases talk about you're not a customer, you have no relationship with the bank, no prior relationship. Appellee Professional Pharmacy 2 had no account and had no prior relationship with the bank. The other thing is, that you look at the substance of the claim. And in fact, Your Honor, Justice, to your point, the case law talks about tort duties versus contractual duties, and here you look at the substance of the cause of action pled, and the substance is the appellee entered a depository contract with the bank, and the bank paid money out in violation of that depository contract or in breach of that contract. They failed to prove that. That was their claim. The bank's duties only exist in contract. The accounts are creatures of contract. So the duties out of there are contract duties. In the reply brief, we discussed there's two cases that Appley relies on to try to find a duty, and quite frankly, they're just contrary to Texas Court of Appeals law. And the first case is the Bayer case. It's a breach of contract case. It's a Supreme Court case, but it's a case in which a father and a daughter had a relationship with the bank and had, or with A.G. Edwards, I believe, had discussions about types of accounts, transferring money, changing accounts, things like that. It wasn't done properly. The jury found breach of contract. The judgment was on breach of contract, and the Supreme Court affirmed on breach of contract. That has nothing to do with a tort duty. The other case, Torres, is directly contrary to the Guerra case and those line of holdings. That's a federal district court opinion. It's on a motion to dismiss, and the court allowed the claim to go forward. But as pointed out by other cases, they rely as authority on an Alabama case that has been distinguished and not even relied on in Alabama. And it's the only case in Texas that even comes close to finding some type of duty to a non-account owner or a non-party. Which also, Your Honors, brings me to issue five, which I think goes to the damage issue or the harm issue. And issue five is the economic loss rule. We discussed that on page 34 of the brief. Mere economic harm is not recoverable in simple negligence cases. This is a simple negligence case. It's not negligent misrepresentation. It's not breach of fiduciary duty. It's not anything else but simple negligence. A tort claim is precluded because the losses here is money paid out of an account pursuant to a valid binding contract, pursuant to a court order. The economic loss doctrine is going to preclude those tort claims for economic harm. The only case cited to by Appley to try to demonstrate that the economic loss rule would not bar their claim is the Shariland case. And in that particular case, it is a Texas Supreme Court case, but it is not, it's not on point. That discusses the economic loss doctrine, but in that particular case, there was property damage to a sewer system needing repairs to property, damage to property. And that's what the economic loss doctrine talks about. In simple negligence, where you have parties who are not in privity, like Appley and appellant, not in privity, simple negligence is alleged, you cannot recover unless there's some property damage or personal injury. Here, we don't have that. All we have is money paid out of the account. And the Supreme Court talks about you should look at case by case to determine the applicability of the economic loss doctrine. And here, the factors predominate in favor, or the facts of this case predominate in favor of applying the economic loss doctrine. You have the appellee asserting a contractual relationship, but simply failing to prove it, losing at trial. You have an express written contract that governs the subject matter. It governs the deposits, governs the money, governs what will be done when a writ of garnishment is served, how the money will be paid out. And third, you don't have, as in Shariland, these things like negligent misrepresentation or breach of fiduciary duty, other type of torts. This is mere simple negligence. And in fact, this court's opinion in Gunderson versus Wells Fargo is probably more applicable. That's a case where a wife had a bank account, was served with a levy for her husband's debts out of California, and Wells Fargo Bank paid that levy, and the court affirmed summary judgment, said that's what the account agreement is, and the bank's entitled to rely on that account agreement. Same thing here. We have an account agreement. Banks served with a garnishment. They're entitled to rely on the deposit contract, The owner was Fidelis Bassong. Bank's the garnishee. There's a court order or judgment. They pay the money, just like in Gunderson. They're entitled. That cuts off the cause of action by the appellee at that point. Finally, Your Honor, I'd like to just touch on issue six, as you brought up with respect to negligence, allegation of opening the account. In issue number six, we discussed that there was no expert testimony on any standard of care by the bank. It's a federally regulated institution subject to a number of regulations. There is no expert testimony of how opening a lawful binding contract between two parties that's not challenged by the parties to the contract and paying money out of that account pursuant to a court order, how that's a breach of any standard of care of any bank. And under the Supreme Court precedent, with expert testimony being required for that, for breaches of standard of care, there was no testimony of that. There was no offer of any evidence of that.
They had a previous, the same parties had a previous account with the bank, didn't they not, that was opened as a partnership account, partnership plus, or professional pharmacy plus?
Your Honor, yes, Fidelis Bassong, Pamela Ashew, and Tuzmo Jama did open an account for professional pharmacy plus, and Fidelis Bassong and his wife had other accounts at the bank, but professional pharmacy 2, this alleged partnership, did not have any prior account with the bank. Is that, hope I addressed the question.
Yes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. We'll hear from the appellee.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is John Hafen. I'm here on behalf of the appellee, Professional Pharmacy 2. And to briefly begin, I'd like to jump into the facts a little bit because I believe the core issue here and the shield that the appellant is trying to yield at this point is this shield of there's this master account agreement, there is no relationship. And so I think the core issue to be addressed that I want to get into is the risk utility analysis that must be gone into to determine whether a legal duty is owed in this case by the appellant to the appellee. To do so, I think it's important to address some of the basic facts, one of which you point out, Justice Gardner. The three partners of the appellee, Tuzmo Jama, Fidel Bassong, Pam Ashew, they had a pharmacy business called Professional Pharmacy Plus. They formed the business as a general partnership. They prepared all the documents necessary for that formation. They registered as a licensed pharmacy with the Texas Pharmacy Board. All the documents reflect them as being a partnership. They opened a bank account with the appellant. A bank account, it was a business account, a partnership account.
Do I understand all the documents are there except the partnership agreement?
There is no partnership agreement. But there is testimony in the record that reflects there was an understanding between the partners as to how the profits would be distributed. There were issuances of K-1s, and so there was an understanding with respect to the division of profits and losses. What there was not was a formal written partnership agreement between the partners.
Are you talking about Professional Pharmacy Plus or Professional Pharmacy 2?
With respect to both, I'm sorry, and I should have clarified, with respect to both Professional Pharmacy Plus and Professional Pharmacy 2, there was no written partnership agreement on either account. These three partners started a pharmacy right here in Tarrant County. They found some success in doing so and decided to start a new pharmacy. They went through the exact same process that they did to open Professional Pharmacy Plus. They went to the county, they got an assumed name certificate, they got a pharmacy license from the state, they got an EIN number from the IRS, and then they went to the bank and they told the bank in doing business with Professional Pharmacy Plus, we need to set up a new account, a new business account for a new partnership called Professional Pharmacy 2. Later on, two of the partners, Fidel Bassong and Pam Ashew, went to the bank and to open that account. And they provided to the bank an assumed name certificate that had the name of three individuals, not two, three individuals. They also provided a W-9 form that was filled out by Pam Ashew, which reflected that Professional Pharmacy 2 was indeed a partnership, and they provided their IDs as well. Based on the information provided, apparently we now know that the appellant created an account as a joint sole proprietorship.
Do I recall reading that the bank said they could not open the bank checking account without a partnership agreement? Which then brings to mind the question, how did they open the first checking account for Pharmacy Plus? Was it a partnership account?
Professional Pharmacy Plus was set up as a partnership account, yes, Your Honor.
And obviously there was also no partnership agreement available to open that account.
There was no partnership agreement, Your Honor.
Okay.
And that raises an important fact that there was a history here with these individuals. It wasn't as if this was the first time they were setting up an account at this bank. And I would like to point out, Justice McCoy, that in addition to there being no partnership agreement, there is also testimony by representatives of the bank that you cannot set up an account as a joint sole proprietorship if there's an assumed name certificate with three individuals. In fact, one of the bank representatives went so far as to say that in her 10 years' experience, she had never seen an account set up as a joint sole proprietorship serving as the basis of that, an assumed name certificate with three individuals. And by the way, the name Professional Pharmacy 2, which is reflected on the assumed name certificate, which is in the record, is also the name that was used as the account title at the bank. So clearly, they relied on that assumed name certificate to establish the name for the account. So they went forward, they used this account as their operating account, they had a deposit agreement on file that was signed by both the bank and my client that allowed Texas Medicaid to do direct deposits into that account. That direct deposit authorization reflects the name Professional Pharmacy 2 on it. It is signed by one of the partners, Pam Ashew. And so the vast majority of the funds that came into this bank account were the operating funds of the partnership Professional Pharmacy 2. That's clear in the record. It's also clear from the testimony of the three partners. Long after opening the account and long after using it without any issue, they find out while two of the partners were in Africa that the account was frozen. This is the first time they had had any issue whatsoever with the account or any knowledge whatsoever that there was a problem with the account the way it was set up. And so, of course, they did everything in their power from that point to try to resolve the issue. And unfortunately, their efforts failed, and the monies in that account were garnished in the amount of over $116,000.
At that time, was the Pharmacy Plus account still open and operating?
It was, Your Honor. So let me turn first to issue number three, which I believe is really one of the deciding factors here, for the simple reason that many of the defenses alleged by appellant are premised on the inexistence of a relationship, the inexistence of a duty. And I'd like to refer the court to the two cases relied upon by appellant and also the cases that the appellee relies upon. First, there's the Guerra versus Regent Bank decision. The court did what it was supposed to do. It went through the risk-utility analysis, and it made two basic fact findings. First, they determined there was no relationship between the plaintiff and the bank. This is a case where the plaintiff was an individual whose name was used by a criminal to set up an account in the name of the plaintiff. And the bank basically says that there's no relationship, and second, there's no way the bank could have foreseen that this could harm the plaintiff. And the bank said it was not reasonable to expect Regents to foresee that an individual with the same first and last name living over 200 miles away would be affected by the opening of this checking account. Those are the two primary findings this court relies on in declining to extend a duty between the plaintiff and the bank based on no relationship and it's not foreseeable. Similarly, in Owens versus Comerica Bank, this is a case where Owens, the plaintiff, had invested monies in an individual who set up a bank account, and instead of using those monies for the benefit of the investor, the individual used those monies for his personal benefit. And the investor, the plaintiff, sued the bank, stating that the bank should have known, the bank should have stopped it, and by the way, you violated your internal procedures and the standards in the banking industry in not setting up the account properly. The court, again, in applying the risk utility test, focuses on the same two issues. No relationship, and it also says it's not foreseeable. The court states it is, of course, possible that any bank account may be used for a wrongful purpose, but we see nothing in the facts of this case that would lead Comerica to anticipate a danger of injury to another when it opened and maintained the two accounts for Davis. I'd like to refer the court to the Torres case. This is a case out of the Western District in which the Western District declined to grant a 12B6 motion. Court was addressing the same issue, and interestingly here, the court again focuses on the relationship. But what the court says here, it's different. The court says, because plaintiff is a citizen of Peru, he would not necessarily have the same indicia of identification as would an American citizen. It is therefore reasonable to conclude that the bank believed it had a relationship with plaintiff when it opened the account based upon the presentation of his passport. So basically, again, similar to the Guerra case, an individual set up a bank account with another's name, presented a passport, and the court concluded that it's reasonable for the bank to believe that there was a relationship because of the presentation of the plaintiff's passport. So basically here, the court says, it's reasonable to assume there is a relationship, and thus, we're not going to go on the grounds that Guerra went on. The most apt case here is the Supreme Court decision, A.G. Edwards versus Bayer. And as pointed out by Mr. Pulowski, this is a case where the trial court ruled in favor of the plaintiff on both negligence and breach of contract grounds. The breach of contract was an allegation that the court failed to set up a bank account as agreed and list the plaintiff as a joint survivor. And at the trial court, the court ruled there was a finding of negligence and breach of contract, and the plaintiff decided to recover on breach of contract grounds. Despite that, the Supreme Court made the statement, A.G. Edwards' failure to take sufficient steps to create the JTWROS account necessary to establish Alicia's right of survivorship is a breach of a separate duty owed to Alicia. That is this case. There was a relationship between Professional Pharmacy 2 and its individual partners with the bank. They instructed the bank to open a partnership account to serve as the operating account of Professional Pharmacy 2. Because of this pre-existing relationship, because of the instructions, much like in the Bayer case, because of the instructions provided by the appellee to the bank, there is a duty on the bank to open the account as instructed by the appellee in accordance with the documents provided by the appellee.
You lost me. Where you said there was an existing relationship between Pharmacy 2 and the bank.
And that's a good point, Your Honor. Professional Pharmacy 2, and what I mean to imply is between the individual partners. There was an existing relationship with the individual partners. These individual partners went in and did transactions on the Professional Pharmacy Plus account.
Right.
These are the same individual partners who created or meant to create a partnership account for Professional Pharmacy 2.
Okay, I'm with you.
So, Your Honors, I would ask.
I have a question for you. In terms of the garnishment action, when the bank answered the garnishment action, was there any reference to the Pharmacy Plus account?
In the answer?
Yes.
Yes, in the answer, I believe, and I wish I had it in front of me, but the answer basically stated debts owed by Fidelis Bisong, and it listed various accounts, and it listed the 3775 account. I believe the language used was owned in the name Professional Pharmacy 2. It did not expressly state that it was an account owned in the name of Fidel Bisong, but it was listed as one of the various accounts on which Fidel Bison the debt or was indebted to the bank.
So the partnership account, that one was that everyone concedes it was a partnership account, it's a professional pharmacy plus. That was also listed in the answer to the garnishment action.
It was not, Your Honor.
That's what I was asking.
It was not. And I believe the reason for that is that there was testimony on the record at the trial that when garnishments take place, the internal operating procedures of the bank is to review the master account agreement. And the master account agreement for Professional Pharmacy Plus obviously reflected that it was a partnership versus the master account agreement, which, by the way, in this account, the master account agreement referred to by appellant, there was no finding that was the agreement between the parties to set up a joint sole proprietorship. There was no finding by the jury. Moreover, there's testimony by Fidel Bison that he never signed that master account agreement. But the bank, the record reflected by the bank was that they relied on that master account agreement in doing the garnishment and listing that as one of the accounts subject to the garnishment.
Was there a dispute in the evidence by the bank that the request at the time of the setting up of the account in January 14th of 2003, that the request and intent on the part of Pamela Ashew and Fidelis Bichon was to set up a partnership account? Did they dispute that?
I believe the testimony was that it was set up based upon the documents provided by the two individuals who went to set up.
I saw that in the briefs. I understand that's what it was said, is that it was set up according to the assumed name certificate and whatever other documents were given, but doesn't say anything about whether the bank contested the testimony on the part of the two individuals that they intended a partnership account.
Your Honor, I don't recall there being any direct testimony stating that the intent of the individuals when they came to set up the account was to set it up as a joint sole proprietorship.
Thank you.
I thought that they wanted to set it up as a partnership, but the bank representative said they couldn't. And maybe counsel for the bank can respond to this. Couldn't because the third person wasn't there that needed to sign or something to that effect.
I don't recall that exact testimony. I do know that there was testimony that a signature card was provided to the two individuals, and they took that signature card to the third partner. Okay. I see that my time is up, and I thank you.
Thank you. We have rebuttal.
Mr. Pulaski, before you start on what your thoughts are, I've got a question for you involving this answer to question one. It specifically is asking if the plaintiff, whom I'm assuming is identified as plaintiff, is the professional pharmacy too.
Yes.
Did plaintiff and Washington Mutual agree to a partnership account for the account ending on January? That's not inquiring if they agreed to an account to be set up, is it?
It does. It's the contract formation question. And so it's inquiring as to whether they ultimate issue of whether they agreed to set up a partnership account. That's what they allege.
Yeah, but isn't it the bank's position that they did set up an account, it was just an individual account?
No, not to mince words, when the individuals, Fidelis Bisong and Pamela Ashew, set up the account, it's their account. It's not an account on behalf of a partnership. They have, as Your Honor's Justice point out, they have a Professional Pharmacy Plus account. The answer in the garnishment talks about two individual accounts, Fidelis Bisong and Pamela Ashew own, and this account for Fidelis Bisong and Pamela Ashew. It specifically lists those accounts in the answer to garnishment. So it's the appellee's burden. They alleged a contract. Depository contract with the bank, they had to prove it, and they didn't.
What did they prove, or does the bank contest that over the time from 03 to 08 that there were numerous deposits made into the account under an agreement that that Pharmacy 2 had with Medicaid to put the money in the account, and it was actually funds received payable to Professional Pharmacy 2 and put in that account?
If you look at the evidence in the record, there's a direct deposit authorization form that the bank signed off on. It's signed by Pamela Ashew, not as partner. It says Professional Pharmacy 2 on the form. It does not say partnership anywhere on the form. So there were direct deposits made, just like I can deposit money in your account. Anybody can deposit money in someone else's account. It's just a direct deposit authorization. Also, this is the issue of equitable ownership of the money. This is the issue that Appley brings up for the first time on appeal. They're saying, well, it was our money that went into the account, but yet the account by its terms is a general deposit account. There was no question or no finding that it was anything other than a general deposit account.
My concern is just over the period of time we're talking about, from 03 to 08, that there was an ongoing relationship in which what was going on between the people that were operating the pharmacy and the bank is that the people who were operating the pharmacy were providing services to someone, including the Medicare, Medicaid, and that they were getting money for those services, and they were put in this account. And so there was an ongoing relationship for a long period of time in which there was at least acquiescence in the fact that we've got an account here for Pharmacy 2 at the bank.
No, Your Honor, I disagree with that. It's not just because you accept a deposit from someone other than the account owner does not make that person in privity with the account agreement or have rights under the account agreement. Basically, it's freedom of contract. As the justices point out, when they came to the bank, they said they wanted to open a partnership account, and the bank told them, freedom of contract, said, we don't do it that way. Banks' internal policies change over time, and they said, we don't open partnership accounts without all the partners and without partnership agreement, and they have other requirements.
How'd you open the Partnership Plus account?
That, Your Honor, is it's not in evidence in the record. That account was opened at a different time, and I think presumably a different branch. Even the account agreement is not in evidence in the record. There are individual account agreements in evidence, but not the Professional Pharmacy Plus. But keep in mind, Washington Mutual was one of the largest depository institutions in the United States at the time, had millions of accounts. The fact that these three people go into one bank branch, open a partnership account with all three partners, and sign a partnership account agreement, that's why that partnership account is not in the garnishment answer. It's a separate account. And this account for Fidelis Besong and Pamela Ashew, they have freedom of contract. They chose to open it that way. They could have went down the street, tried it at a different bank. And in fact, what they did was they chose to open it that way as husband and wife with right of survivorship, which you don't get with a partnership. They both signed it as owner. And then subsequently, the record shows they added the third alleged partner, Tuzmo Jama. They gave her a power of attorney over the account. So what they did was they simply said, we'll go ahead and bank with you, and we understand you won't open a partnership account for us, but that's fine. Then we don't want one. We'll take an individual account, and we'll put her on through a power of attorney, and we'll do our banking that way. That's a freedom of contract. They're entitled to enter an agreement how they see fit or how they desire to do it.
What was the title? I assume this was an account that allowed checks to be drawn to manage drafts. What was the title on the checks? What name was on the checks as the person who was named on the checks as the person who's writing demand requests for checks?
I believe that the title on the account is the same, or the title on the checks is the same as the title on the account agreement. It's just the title, Professional Pharmacy 2. It's as they presented with an assumed name certificate. The account statements and the checks would say Professional Pharmacy 2.
The bank honored those checks over these period of time from 03 to 08?
Honored those checks out of this 3775 account. They're not checks drawn on some verbal bank account. They're checks drawn on an account governed by the depository contract, the master account agreement, Appendix C, Defendant's Exhibit 1. There's only one account at the bank. The ownership of that account is established as a matter of contract by that document. Remember, it's not challenged by the actual account owners.
How about looking at the exhibit, Defendant's 1, that's Attachment C? Whenever we're looking at that and we're looking at the boxes at the bottom where the word owner appears. That's the only place owner appears, except there are some references to owner up here in the smaller print under the numbers 1 through 5 above.
Yes.
But it, when it says owner, it doesn't say owner of account, owner of what. It just says owner.
It also, Your Honor, does say owner. Fidel Spisong and Pamela Ashew, they're not signing in the capacity as a partner or anything else. And our testimony at trial was we look at who the owner is, but also in the box where it says the account and deposits open shall be of the following type, joint sole proprietorship. This account is held in joint tenancy with right of survivorship. That is by definition an individual owned account. There is no joint tenancy with right of survivorship of partnership between partners in a partnership. That does not exist as a matter of law. That's the other part where it tells them what type of account. Plus, it's not disputed at trial. The testimony was, what did the bank tell you? And both Pamela Ashew and Fidelis Bisong said, I don't remember. And the bank said, the bank's testimony is unrefuted that they didn't open that account.
Well, let me be the devil's advocate for a minute. I understand your position. And let's just say that the partnership came in through its partners and tried to open a partnership account, and the bank failed to use ordinary care and didn't open it as a partnership account.
Told them they couldn't.
Your position is that, well, the partnership has no contractual cause of action against the bank because there's no contract, and effectively has no negligence cause of action against the bank because limitations begins to run on the day of the legal injury. Hence, too bad, so sad, pharmacy, you have no causes of action against the bank regardless.
There, I think that's correct. There is no cause of action because a party is charged with knowledge of what they sign. There's no evidence in this case of fraud, trickery, deceit, anything of that nature. The account agreement is unambiguous. Both Fidelis Bisong and Pamela Ashew admit they received a copy of it, admit it's their signature on it, and they're charged with knowledge of that. They can't come back as a different entity, otherwise everybody could do that. I could go to your account and say, it's not yours and your wife's account. Your wife and I were partners. That's a partnership account. That's not what your account agreement says, but I can just throw that out the window. But it is the single operative document in the case. The accounts are creatures of contract, not of tort. Thank you, Justices. We respect your request to reverse and render.
Thank you, Counsel, for your arguments, both sides. We appreciate it. And your case is submitted, and you're excused. And we will stand adjourned.